Thank you, Jerry and Joe. And it is Blue Jays talk till midnight. The Blue Jays lose 1-0 to the Tampa Bay Rays. They manage 2 hits. They've still averaged 7 runs per game over this homestand. But they didn't get any when they needed them. And they lose 1-0. The Tampa Bay Rays, the final 10 Blue Jays retired in order. And 16 of the last 17. Not that the Rays did that much better, but one of their 2 hits left the ballpark, the Ryan Hannigan home run on the first pitch of the third inning. 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, and long distance is 1-888-666-0590. It is Blue Jays talk till midnight. We'll hear from John Gibbons. We'll hear from the Tampa Bay Rays radio broadcast crew of Dave Wills and Andy Freed. They'll be coming on shortly, but first, let's talk to you. Daniel is in Toronto, listening on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. You're going to be the leadoff man on Blue Jays Talk. Go right ahead.
I'd just like to start with a programming note. I love this Blue Jays Till Midnight with the interviews spliced in and the guest speakers, and I think it's great. And you should consider keeping it on for more than just a few days.
Well, we'll see what the uppity-ups think, but your comments are certainly noted.
Suggestion box.
Yes. Blue Jays talk is nothing without its suggestion box.
as for tonight, I'm going back in my memory, just kind of foggy last few years. It seems like the Jays always have a lot of times have trouble with the spot starter guys, the guys who have been in AAA making their first start, and they just seem to carve up the Jays. And I don't know if it's they're not taking aggressive enough approaches, they're waiting to see what the guy has, and the guy gets ahead with first pitch strikes, which happened a lot tonight. There was just a lot of fastballs. First pitch fastball that the guys let go by, I guess, to get a good look at him. But then they were behind, and then he could start playing with the corners, and then, you know, it was a mess from there. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
It's interesting because it does seem that way to me, too. And I kind of expected that to happen on Wednesday because you've got Kyle Hendricks, who's a rookie that they've never seen before, kind of a slot-balling righty. And the impression that I have is that those guys give the Blue Jays fits. And it didn't. I mean, he it took them a while to get to him, but they did get to him third time through the lineup and did it pretty hard. So I wonder how much it's confirmation bias or how much it actually happens. But, you know, there are two schools of thought, right? If you listen to this show, and I'm assuming since you like the midnight thing that you listen to the show quite often, you understand that when guys swing at the first pitch and get out, there's a barrage of callers going, oh, they got to be patient, what are they doing? Why would you ever swing at a first pitch? And then today you're talking about how they let too many hittable first pitches go by in an effort to be patient against a guy who's been wild over the course of his minor league career and who was awfully wild there in the first inning but managed to wriggle out of it. So it's kind of a double-edged sword, and I kind of hope that, again, second or third time through the lineup, they would start to get to him, and they just didn't.
Yeah, like I was a little bit annoyed in the first inning after the 4-pitch walk to Reyes, and the catcher came up to talk to him, and I said, for sure, he's going to get a center cut, get me over fastball. And I thought Bautista would be, you know, on top of that, and sure enough, he got that fastball and just let it go right by, and I was just like, oh, there it was.
And, but if he had grounded into a double play, on that first pitch fastball, 95% of the people listening to this program would be screaming at the radio or the television saying, why did you swing at that pitch? He just walked somebody on 4 pitches.
Yeah, you know what? I give him the green light anytime, and I was like, oh, that was the pitch for him right there. And the other thing I wanted to say just about J-Hap was just, I mean, tough luck on this guy. He really carved them up, because he was really hitting his spots, and he was just doing a heck of a job. And by the way, the one home run that they did hit off of him was a first pitch. They said, okay, he's going to try to get the go-ahead fastball, and the guy slammed it, right?
So, yeah, ambush mode, absolutely, for Ryan Hannigan right there. Absolutely, and he was terrific. Thank you, Daniel.
Thanks.
Appreciate the call. You're right. J-Hap was terrific. And the Blue Jays just couldn't get him any offense. It's over in Detroit. The Tigers beat the Indians 7-2. And so now they will wait for the outcome of the Red Sox-Royals game. As of right now, the Detroit Tigers are in a virtual tie for first place in the AL Central with the Kansas City Royals and currently 4.5 games ahead of the Blue Jays for the second wild card. They both are. But the Royals are trailing the Boston Red Sox 4-2 in the bottom of the seventh with one out and nobody on. Blue Jays lose it 1-0 to the Tampa Bay Rays. Sneak in one more phone call before we get to John Gibbons. Dylan is in Edmonton listening on MLB.com audio. Hey, Dylan.
Hey, Mike. So I noticed Grant Balfour was using some grip on the brim of his hat in the ninth tonight.
Yep.
I was wondering what your opinion on that was.
I think it would be very hard to prove that that's not rosin. And rosin is a legal substance that pitchers are allowed to use. You know, I really think that's about the size of it right there.
Okay, so last year when Dirk Ahers pointed out with Buchholz, was there any way of proving that he was using sunscreen in that too?
Well, I think that was more goop than sunscreen. But, yeah, there certainly is a way of pointing that out. And again, it seemed so apparently obvious that Clay Buchholz was loading up with something that's certainly a foreign substance that's not legal in the game. There's
okay.
a big difference. But the question, the reason that a lot of teams don't call pitchers on that stuff is because a lot of times their guys are doing it too. And so you got to make sure you're not in a glass house if you want to throw that stone. And I don't know if it's worth doing a lot of the time.
Yeah, that's definitely a good point. I noticed after Dirk made that comment that I've been seeing it a lot more with players. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, no problem. Thank you, Dylan. Appreciate the call. We've got John Gibbons, the skipper of the Blue Jays, going to give his thoughts on the Jays' 1-0 loss to the Tampa Bay Rays. Twin two-hitters tonight. Here's what Gibby had to say.
Gibby, was that just the case of you guys not knowing the pitcher and the pitcher having a good night?
Oh, to be honest, what I saw, I mean, I thought he was pretty damn good. The chance to get him was in the first. When he had trouble with his own, you know, he didn't throw a lot of strikes, and he got the ground ball to get two and get out of there scoreless. And then after that, things clicked for him. I thought Hannigan did a great job with him behind the plate. It really all came together. I mean, he's a kid they picked up from, I think it was Washington last year for Lobaton. So, I mean, he turned out, I mean, he was great tonight. Hap was great. You know, the difference was that solo home run. So, if you love pitch, good pitching, you saw it.
Can you just maybe talk a little bit more about what Hap was able to do tonight? It just seems that, you know, he's just come along so far this year, and starts like that really show just how far he's come, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he's on a nice little roll. I mean, he was really good tonight too. You know, he just gave up that solo home run to Hannigan, and I mean, of course, that's the difference in the game, and that's the way it goes sometimes. But yeah, he's having a nice year. You know, he's Hap's a good competitor. You know, and he's I really see his game kind of coming together the last couple months. I think he's pitching the best that we've seen him, you know, since he's been here. Then he definitely pitched good enough to win tonight.
Given your situation, given where the team is, when your starting pitcher gives you. An outing like that, is that a game where you just have to win it?
Well, Hap was outstanding. Yeah, I mean, it's a game, you know, you give up one run, you expect to win that game. But, you know, on the other hand, the other guy was pretty damn good too. So, there's not a whole lot of margin for error on our side. Realistically, whether we're going to win every game the rest of the way is probably not going to happen. But, we need to bounce back these next couple of days, that's for sure.
When Jake McGee hits a guy in the chin last night and you guys have to face him today, do you think something like that can stick in your player's mind, knowing how wild he was and got pretty inside on Jose there on the first pitch in that bat?
Because, half of them probably didn't know he hit somebody last night, you know. So, that's the way McGee pitches. He lets it rip, you know, and he pitches. He loves to throw inside to right-handers. That's his weapon. He's much tougher on righties than he is on lefties. So, that's not a factor. Kid's pretty good, but I mean, he's got a power arm and he lets it fly, and it's pretty good.
Yeah, you can hear the disappointment in John Gibbons' voice there. The kid was pretty good. He was. Nate Karns, 7 innings of 2-hit shutout. Jay Happ, 7 innings of 2-hitter and allowed the one run to on the home run to Ryan Hannigan on that ambush, fastball ambush leading off the third. We'll take one more call, and then we let the network go at the bottom of the hour. We will have Rays play-by-play voice Andy Fried with us as Blue Jays Talk Till Midnight continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet590.com. But we take one more call, and we go back to Edmonton again on the Rogers radio app. Josh in Edmonton, welcome aboard.
Thanks, Mike. I guess this is where all the real baseball fans are at tonight, eh?
I think only the real baseball fans were out tonight. Less than 20,000 in the park. And somebody, in fact, Greg Brady, who's our morning show host on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, said, well, the Rays just don't draw. That's why it is. And my answer was, last time the Rays were here, we got 105,000 for a three-game series. So
yeah.
It ain't the Rays.
No, definitely not. Mike, I just wanted to ask you if you agree with Jose Reyes' soccer-like tactics.
Oh,
when it
absolutely.
Comes to- Yeah.
Yes. Get on base. Right.
All right. Exactly. Yeah. You got to do what you can here at this point in the season.
At any point, get on base. If you can make somebody think you got hit by a pitch, you make somebody think you got hit by a pitch. Plain and simple.
Yeah.
Derek Jeter does it. Everybody loves Derek Jeter.
Maybe a little too much, eh?
Yeah, definitely.
I guess I would agree with you as well on that, and. I guess you know these 1-0 losses really show how silly that win loss stat is for pitchers. It's really kind of irrelevant when your offense can't give you one run.
Yep,
doesn't take anything away from the pitcher.
No, that's absolutely true. Absolutely,
yeah.
Jay Happ deserved better tonight.
Yeah, that's for sure. Right on. Well, thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Josh. Appreciate the call. The phone lines stay open, 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, and long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Blue Jays lose it 1-0 to the Tampa Bay Rays, and as of right now, are 4.5 games behind the second wild card in the American League. That is likely to change. It will change if the Red Sox can hold on and beat the Kansas City Royals. The Blue Jays would move back to 4 games out of that second wild card spot. It's a Honda Post Game Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. That's going to do it for us across the country, but Blue Jays Talk Till Midnight continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet590.ca. Back here tomorrow, 12:30 Eastern for a 107 First Pitch, R.A. Dickey and Jeremy Hellickson. You've been listening to Home Hardware, Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by Home Hardware. Homeowners helping homeowners with expert advice. This copyrighted broadcast is presented by authority of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership. It may not be reproduced or retransmitted in any form. Any accounts and descriptions of this game may not be disseminated without the express written consent of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership or the Sportsnet Radio Network. For Jerry and Joe, Tom, Alex, and Bunkus, I'm Mike Wilner. Bye-bye.
You already think you know more than Gibby and Alex Anthopoulos. So you must know more than Wilner, right? Blue Jays Talk with Mike Wilner after the game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
3-2 pitch slug to left center field. That's up the gap, moving over quickly. Anthony goes running, makes the catch. Out of nowhere, Anthony runs it down from center field. What an athlete.
Run prevention is a beautiful thing, and you just heard it there from Anthony Ghost, taking a leadoff double at least away from Will Myers in the top of the seventh inning in a 1-0 game. It was a 1-0 game till the end. Twin two-hitters, the Blue Jays and the Tampa Bay Rays, and the wrong team, from this perspective anyway, wound up on top. It was the Tampa Bay Rays. The right team, from the perspective of the man sitting to my left, wound up winning this game. It is Blue Jays Talk Till Midnight. Phone lines are open and will remain open all the way to midnight at 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, and long distance, 1-888-666-0590. But first, we are joined by Rays broadcaster Andy Fried, and thank you so much for, you know, you sit here for 10 minutes, you listen to the post game, and appreciate it a lot.
Honored to be here with the legendary Tom Young and the legendary, I'm in the legendary Jerry Howarth's chair right now.
You're in so Jerry Howarth's chair.
I'm enjoying this seat. No wonder he's lasted this long. This is a very comfortable chair.
I got to tell you, the first time I sat in Tom Cheek's chair was just blew me away. It's pretty cool. And Tom Young is, in fact, legendary.
Yes,
there's
he
no
is.
Question about this. So this is the first time that you've ever watched a Tampa Bay Rays team not win at least 90 games.
First time since 07. This is my 10th year with the Rays.
And I thought you guys started the year, the two of you started together the year they started winning.
That would make such a great story.
That's
we
what
suffered
I thought
through
happened.
Three of the bad years for the Devil Rays. And then they changed the name in 08, and then you know everything flipped. And it's a reminder to Blue Jays fans. It's a reminder to any fan around the league. I remember some of the Twins guys came up to us in 08, and they were saying you'd be amazed at how fast something can turn. And it did. I mean, it did seemingly overnight.
Yeah.
And it started when the Rays beat the Blue Jays at Disney that year and started an incredible run. So, I mean, this is just from my perspective. I think John Gibbons has done a good job. I think DeMarlo Hale's done a good job. Because I look at the Blue Jays, and I didn't know what their starting rotation, how they could be this good, to be honest. And I'm happy for them. I think the Blue Jays are still very much on the right path. And some of the guys we see coming up, I think the Blue Jays are going to be a very solid rotation next year.
Yeah, those kids are really something. And you would know. I mean, you've been watching for years all these great young pitchers come through the Tampa Bay organization, whether it's a first overall pick like David Price or whether it's a guy like Jeremy Hellickson or Jake Oder. We can go back to Jeff Niemann, you know,
sure.
and guys like that. You've been just so spoiled over the last half decade.
Well, you know, Nathan Carnes comes up tonight and does what he did, and instantly the tweets are coming in from all around the country, baseball fans saying, oh, the Rays bring up another one.
Yeah.
And look, this team, our team, is completely built on pitching and defense. I mean, we didn't expect to be a prolific offense, and we were right. We're not. But we are less than an even average offense. And, you know, Mike, if you had said back in March in Port Charlotte that this Rays team would have 20 shutouts, this was our 20th shutout. We've won 5 one-run games, you'd think print the playoff tickets. But they've been so woeful offensively that they haven't been able to hit their way to even a decent record this year.
And been shut out, I think, 19 times,
yeah,
right, with 20 shutouts. That's amazing.
That's the down part. We've thrown 20 and been shut out 18 or 19 times. I lost track.
What's amazing And you know, when we're like in I don't want to say a transition mode here in Toronto, because obviously this team is built to win, and it's going to be very, very difficult for the Blue Jays to get in this year. It's still a possibility. And again, you had a team come back from 9.5 out on September 1st to make the playoffs. The Blue Jays are looks like they're going to be 4 out after tonight. Boston leading Kansas City 4-2 as they now move to the bottom of the 8th in KC. But there's been a lot of talk, and we led with that clip of Anthony Gost making a spectacular catch on Will Myers. He's the best defensive center fielder I've ever seen. Ryan Goins plays a brilliant second base. The Tampa Bay Rays have been built on pitching and defense for so many years, and the defense has made the pitching that much better. I sat here and thought, well, what if you just go all glove right up the middle and just don't care? Have your first 6 hitters be able to hit, and have 3 gloves at second, short, and center just to take hits away. And there's no metric, that really good one, to measure how they do it or how good they'd be at it. But it really does seem to me that those extra, the plus-plus defenders take away so many more hits than they cost you at the plate.
It's much of the reason why the Rays aren't in it this year. Our defense has taken a major step back this year. Yunel Escobar, who the fans always seem to really enjoy whenever he comes back, he made, what is his 17th error of the year tonight? I mean, Yuni's a difficult guy to figure out. I mean, for a year, he'll look really good, and then suddenly he takes a step back. He made 7 errors all of last year. He was Gold Glove worthy a year ago. The Rays had 4 finalists at Gold Glove at every infield position a year ago. I don't know if I'd put Longoria in that mix this year. I mean, Loney's still very solid at first, but middle infield's been a big disappointment. What's interesting, though, too, what masks that a little bit in this day and age of defensive shifting is that the base hit up the middle is gone.
Yeah.
I mean, normally you don't see that, but the range you need is to your left as a second baseman, because you've got to be able to go to the right side if at all possible to take that away. But, you know, shifting is obviously, as you know, a huge part of the game today, but I don't think you can win without pitching and defense. You can win with the less than great offense, but come postseason, and you know we've been lucky enough to be there 4 out of the last 6 years, that it's the teams that pitch and catch that end up winning things in October.
Yeah, lately, for sure. I mean, I think back to the Blue Jays in 93 where they just bludgeoned everybody, right? They didn't have great pitching. They had Roberto Alomar, so there was defense, and Tony Fernandez, too, so great defense up the middle. But they just slugged their way to wins. But we haven't had a team do that lately in the playoffs. And it just makes me wonder if it's worth, you know, Ryan Goins is hitting 197 right now, but playing that kind of second base, and Anthony Gost is hitting 220, but playing that kind of center field. And how much better it makes the pitchers. And this, for the Blue Jays, you know, when September started and they brought Goins and Gost back up and put them in the lineup every day, the Blue Jays have now had 18 straight games in which a starter has gone at least into the seventh. And they haven't done that in this century yet. And that defense makes the pitching look that much better.
I'll tell you what, too. Something that the Blue Jays have that not many teams have is guys that can throw in the outfield.
Yeah.
You know, when we were growing up, everybody had a right fielder that could throw to the plate, and everybody
had two of them here.
Yes, you.
Jesse Barfield and hard-hitting Mark Whitten.
Absolutely. Huh? Tremendous arm. We've got one good outfield arm on this team, and that's Kevin Kiermaier. Outside of that, we don't have a play at the plate anymore. Our guys are pretty much trained to throw to the cutoff man.
Wow.
and allow the run to score because he – and I don't know. We've talked to Joe Madden about it. Maybe guys don't throw as much as they should. You don't have guys airing it out to keep their arms strong. I don't know what the answer is, but the Blue Jays are really well served with Bautista in right and then Cabrera when he's healthy in left. Those guys can throw, and it sounds like Gost is pretty good in center,
Gost
too.
May have the best arm of the three. Yeah. He's just got to work on the accuracy
sure.
a little
Makes
bit.
Makes a big difference, though. Yeah. It really does.
Yeah. It sure does. It stops extra bases. It really does. We're with Andy Fried, one of the voices of the Tampa Bay Rays, with Dave Wills. 10 years. I had no idea. See, I thought it was only seven, but that's great. And I remember when you guys got the gig because – obviously, we're down in the Tampa St. Pete area every spring, right? So we listen to WDAE, the sports mm-hmm. animal. And I remember that it was Charlie Slows and Paul Olden, who's now the PA announcer at Yankee Stadium, and Charlie does the Nationals now. And I know that Dave was the me of the White Sox.
Yes.
What were you before you got this gig?
I was a minor league grunt for 11 years.
Wow.
And I think that's part of the reason why I get along so well with Joe Madden. And Dave, too, because Dave spent time in the minor leagues also. When you've spent time in the minors, there is somewhat of a common bond of mm-hmm. how you come up. You know, Joe spent 30 years in the Angels organization, most of which in the minors. Dave was with the King County Cougars in the Midwest League at single A ball. I spent 2 years in A ball and 5 years at double A and 4 years at triple A. When I got the job with the Rays, I got an email from Sabre, from the Society of American Baseball Research, that said to their knowledge, I was the first announcer that they could find that had gone single A, double A, triple A majors.
That's awesome.
I have no way of doubting it or acknowledging it, but if so, I'm proud of it. I mean, I wouldn't give one of those years back because I felt like after college, it gave me like a postgraduate degree in baseball. So I never really felt nervous in the major leagues. I felt like I was primed and ready for it like any player might be.
That's fantastic. I went single A, double A, single A.
Did you?
Majors.
I did not know that. Yeah.
Short season A both
there
times.
You go.
But then there was like a 7 year gap in between.
Right.
Just reading the sports around here. But I'm not at the level of you guys. I mean, I'm still like working my way up and admire, you know, the guys like you and Terry and with the Angels who worked for so long in the minor leagues. It's Ben Wagner, who's with the Buffalo Bisons, our AAA affiliate, is probably listening to us right now. and those guys, you really have to slug it out. And it must be so difficult to see. Like, I know a lot of times you don't even find out jobs are available until they get filled.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing all these guys pass you by and you think you never really even had a shot. What's that like? What were the winters like for you trying to get up here?
Well, they were busy because you have to make ends meet.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
got to wait tables.
From the outside, the minor leagues are very charming and they are very sweet and they are in many ways. That is real. And
yeah.
I highly recommend for people that are baseball fans to check out some minor league baseball.
Oh, for sure.
It's a wonderful thing from a fan. Working in it, though, it tests your love of doing this, just from a financial standpoint. And, you know, when I was younger and single, it wasn't that big a deal. I mean, what else was I going to do anyway?
Right.
You know, baseball, football, basketball, and I was happy as could be. But then you get a girlfriend, and then you get a wife, and then you have a child, and suddenly ends are very difficult to meet.
Mm.
And that was never the reason why I was doing this. For you know, to this day, I'm not doing this to get rich.
Right.
But
and yet you are spectacularly wealthy.
Oh,
right,
you would not believe it's Derek Jeter is jealous of my place.
That's right.
Down in
right beside
Florida.
Hulk Hogan's place.
Yeah,
no,
exactly. But you know, it did test my love of this, as it does everybody. 11 years is a long time to have to make ends meet. So when this job came along, I mean, I will forever be loyal to the Rays.
Mm-hmm.
for making our dream come true, not just for me, but for my wife and our children, because I didn't know how much longer we could, you know, it was getting hard keeping things together in the minor leagues.
Oh, I'm sure. I still, by the way, there's a sub shop in Watertown, New York that still owes me $400.
Good luck. Good luck getting that back.
That's right, from the 1997. A season's worth of ads for $400, and I'm not saying their name just because. But they're not in Canada, so it's nothing here.
But I'll tell you what, Mike, what it does, and you know this too, is that from an employee standpoint, it gives you real appreciation what every department does.
Yep.
At a professional baseball team or a professional sports team, for that matter. In the minor leagues, you do everything from pulling tarp to selling tickets to selling ads to PR and community relations and everything. And so I always
caught in the bullpen one game.
That you would never have gotten that chance, right? In the major league. So you get an idea of what it's like. You know, it's charming and funny when you see the guys pulling tarp that can't get the tarp on the field. A lot of times that's happened this month alone or last month. But when you're out there, you know, it looks kind of light and breezy, but it's heavy, it smells, it's hard to pull, and it's embarrassing when you can't get it on. So my heart goes to those guys when they can't get that tarp
and
on.
And you can get trapped underneath.
Totally.
It. Yeah. Yeah. All those things. This is Andy Fried, one of the play-by-play voices of the Tampa Bay Rays, who beat the Blue Jays 1-0. It is Blue Jays Talk to Midnight, and we will get to your calls, I promise. We got a lot of calls, but we got a lot of time. So we're talking to Andy for a little bit right now. You mentioned that the Rays defense has dropped off. The pitching, obviously, you lose Matt Moore for the year right away. Helixson's been out for a long time. You trade David Price. So the things that we've seen that we're normally used to from the Tampa Bay Rays, we're not getting this year. Does it seem to you that it's just a one-year blip and you'll be right back where you were next year?
That's the hope. I'm not completely convinced.
But Joe Maddon's magic.
I know. You know what? And you know this. There's no such thing as magic. You know. In fact, it's funny you said that. Today, when we walked in, the Orioles came back and beat the Yankees.
Yep.
And we were watching it in the hallway. We walked in. Joe and Jim Hickey, our pitching coach, were watching it with some members of our front office baseball operations department. And somebody in the room said, well, Orioles have that magic going again. And Joe goes, you got to make the magic.
Yeah.
And he's right. I mean, there nothing happens on its own.
You mean like penguins in the clubhouse?
That's
not magic?
You know what? You know what that's about? You know, and Joe, that's how Joe's always introduced. But the reason
we
Joe was doing
and
that,
Lions yesterday.
I did see something about that. Well, Mark Burley, of course. I mean, didn't he have something to do with this?
I thought it was Batista, but I could be wrong.
I'm sure you're right.
I wouldn't bet on that.
But the reason Joe did that last year is because he felt that last year's team was too blah, too vanilla. He didn't feel like there was enough personality, and he's a big believer in that when guys allow their personalities to come out, then you can get sort of a loose, fun atmosphere. And he felt like when the Rays were, they were only doing okay. They were 500 for a long time last year, that he goes, let's do something stupid. Let's do something crazy. Joe tells us a great story of when he was on the coaching staff of the Angels in the 95 season when they tanked down the stretch. In fact, they were the team that had the biggest lead blown until the Rays came back to beat the Red Sox in 2011.
That's the Mariners' huge comeback.
Yes,
there.
And he said that there was a moment that behind the scenes that with the manager and the coaches, they were trying to figure out what can we do with this team. And he said the whole team is tight. The coaching staff was tight. They were shooting around the room ideas of what should we do and more batting practice, less batting practice. We got to take these guys to task. And they asked Joe his opinion. He said, I think we should throw a team party. And he looks back and he goes, you know what? They didn't do it. But he wonders, what if they had? You know, what if something had just loosened it? Because as you know, when you're losing down the stretch, that is one tight feeling. And everybody's looking at each other and who's going to be the guy that breaks us out of this. And each loss becomes a piling on thing. And that's why Joe did the goofy stuff last year, is that he felt there wasn't enough looseness in the clubhouse, and the team went on to win 92 games.
Has there been that much turnover team to team that there are more of those non-vanilla guys around this year?
I think we're a very – I don't like to use the word bland because it has a negative connotation, but we don't have a whole lot of big personalities on this team. Price was one. He had a personality to him that he could do goofy stuff. Chris Archer is a little bit of that. But, you know, Evan Longoria is kind of the face of the franchise, and Evan has tried to be a leader on this team. He is more by example. It's not his personality to be a big rah-rah talking sort of guy. You know, you can't force it. If you try to force it, it doesn't work. You know, in 2008, when the Rays got good, there was Eric Hinsky, who may not be popular here.
Oh,
but
he was just here with the Cubs. We love him.
I loved him.
Anyway,
I always wondered why he got booed here. He was good here. You know, we had Cliff Floyd. who was a mentor on that team. You had Dan Wheeler and Trevor Miller and guys that had been through it before and could be a little crazy sometimes. Troy Percival for a while. That not having that sort of guy on our team, I think, has hurt us. I'm not so sure that there's a whole lot of natural leaders, and we don't have a whole lot of veteran leaders on this team, so I'm curious about that going into next year.
Tell you why Hinsky got booed here is because off of his Rookie of the Year season in 2002, he broke his hand last week of spring training the next year, didn't tell anybody, and played the first 6 weeks, hit 220 with one home run or something off a Rookie of the Year, so everybody thought he just ate his way out of the big leagues.
I never knew that story.
Yeah, never rebounded here anyway. Even though we stayed here for 5 years. And you reminded me of something else that I forgot because I was telling you the Eric Hinsky story.
Because I'm long-winded, that's
because I wanted to get the Hinsky story out. Andy Fried is with us, play-by-play voice of the Rays, and being very, very generous with his time. Thank you so much. Let me ask you this, because I think the people will like to hear this. You're here three times a year. When I travel, and I'm not on the road this year, but I was last year, I mean, obviously, the Trop and Tampa St. Pete's very familiar to me because I'm down there 5 weeks every spring, so I know the area and I know where to go, and I love it. This is one of four cities that you hit three times a year. What do you guys think of – I mean, you generally, I'm sure, stay in like within a five-minute radius of the ballpark, but what do you think of our fair city?
I'm not just saying this. I'm not saying this to suck up. I'm not saying this to garner favor in Toronto, but it's at the very top of my list. I said to my wife on the phone this morning, I said, one of these years, we've got to get you up here because Toronto is an amazing town. And, you know, especially having just come from New York, it's always such an interesting comparison because it's such a clean city here. I don't know how you all do it, but this city to me...
We're not doing it as well as we used to.
Maybe not, but from an out-of-towner, from a guy that's been through New York City and San Francisco, which, you know, your shoes get dirty when you walk through, I mean, this city sparkles to me, and I don't know. To me, it's a very vibrant, alive city. There's always construction going on, which to me always looks like there's kind of a rebuilding of this city. Mm-hmm. I think it's got great restaurants. The people up here are just fabulous. And we have little kids at home, so my wife can't really travel. One of these years when they go old enough, and Toronto's at the top of the list. Toronto and Seattle and Minnesota in July are to me, great
not
places.
Not so much in April.
No, not so much in April. And you know, what's the old line? There's two seasons in Minnesota, July and Christmas, and that's pretty much it.
You know what's funny is that Sal Butera, you see, you keep reminding me of stories. Sal Butera is our video replay coach, and when I was in AA in the Eastern League with the Hardware City Rockets, Butera was our manager, and he used to introduce me to people as, this is Mike, he's from Toronto. In Toronto, there are two seasons, winter and July 11th.
There you go.
That was the deal.
It's a wonderful city. It's a beautiful city. And it was interesting to, you know, when I grew up in Baltimore, so my first real first couple of impressions were the end of the 89 season, where the Blue Jays broke my Orioles' hearts in that wonderful year for both teams. And it was interesting, too, in reading your game notes today. I say yours. I know you didn't write them, but you could.
They'd be so much better if I wrote
the,
them.
you guys just completely eviscerated the Cubs over the weekend by like 28-3.
Yeah.
That they compared. It's the first time they had done anything like that since they did that against the Orioles in 1987. And I don't know how much the Blue Jays remember that series. 31-5, I think it was, beating the Orioles. One of those games, I remember, Ernie Witt hit three homers. There was a 10-home-run game for the Blue Jays.
Oh, yeah, that was in September, the 18-3 game.
But the story that I remember most about that, and I told this on IR tonight,
you're going to say it, aren't
Cal
you?
Ripken,
yeah.
That was where his inning streak came to end. That was an enormous story in Baltimore. And the guy that took over him after those 18,000 innings was Ron Washington. He went out to play shortstop.
And you know the story behind that? It was that the manager of the Orioles at that time was Cal Senior, right? And he said to Ron Washington in the eighth or ninth, I can't remember which inning it was. Well, it had to be the eighth because there was no bottom of the ninth.
Right.
Said, you're going out to play shortstop next inning. And Wash looked at him and said, who's going to tell Junior?
How about that?
Yeah. And Cal Sr. said, you don't worry, I'll take care of that.
Well, Rick Vaughn, who's been our VP of communications for the Rays forever, really since the beginning, had that job with the Orioles.
Okay.
And he talks about that series. I was asking him about it tonight. And he said how weird it looked after seeing Cal Ripken at shortstop. That the first time, because somebody hit a ball to Ron Washington, how weird it looked to have a ball go to shortstop and have it not be Cal Ripken.
Yeah.
And the field looked different. And but it was funny reading those game notes tonight that really brought that series back to me.
That was that the team that started 0-21?
That was the next year.
Oh, right.
That
was, and that got senior fired.
We got started in April in late 87 when the Blue Jays destroyed it.
Yeah, that was some kind of team. That and you know, you would... Thank you. These Blue Jays fans listening now hate you for bringing up 1987.
I'm sorry.
3.5 game lead with
Frank Canada.
Anybody who thinks that the Blue Jays are out of it now, four games left, just remember, 3.5 game lead with 7 games to go, and the Tigers came back and wound up winning the division.
I'm so glad you brought that up. I said this on the air tonight, too. You know, this is what Kansas City's going through right now. You know, you look back when you did win, and you think it was smooth sailing the whole way.
Right.
You get beat up in September. You know, there are moments, it happened to us in 08, it's happened in every year with the Rays of the postseason, that we've thought, you know what, you come after a tough loss, you think, that's it, we're done, you can't survive, you can't come back from this, and you do the next day. It's the great Earl Weaver line, the same football, we do this every day, and you've got to be resilient in September to win it. The Blue Jays are still in this.
They're going to the bottom of the ninth now in Kansas City. Boston leads the Royals 4-2, so if Boston holds on to win, the Blue Jays will be 4 games behind the Kansas City Royals for that second wild card. Seattle is up 2-0 on Oakland. If Seattle wins, they too would move into a tie with Kansas City for that say. All of them. Wow. Oakland would be a half game ahead of Seattle and Kansas City. This is going to be nuts all the way to the season. But the Blue Jays are very much still in this. We got like 3 minutes left here with Andy Fried, who, thank you. So this is the first time we've ever actually just sat and talked like this. It's great.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
I want to ask you about your 08 team and your catcher, because he's ours now, and he's making a heck of an impression here.
We talked about him tonight. You know, Deonna Navarro, in some ways, his legacy of not taking it, not being consistent after that 08 season, we still have yet to really figure out catcher on the Tampa Bay Rays. They plan for Navarro to be the catcher for a long time. 08 was an incredible year. Defensively, offensively, he did everything. And in 09, it seemed to go away. And that, to me, is a mystery. What happened to Deonna Navarro from 2009 to 2012? This was a solid, all-star, big league catcher. And I don't know the answer to that. But I'm happy for him. I'm unhappy for us, because he's really beat us up this year with the Rays. But I'm happy for him. He's a very nice guy. We've gotten to know his wife Shirley very well, and their kids. And their story, as you know, is incredible and dramatic and amazing. But I'm happy for him. But, you know, the Rays, he couldn't get to the next level. And then the thing that still haunts this team in 08, the Rays passed on Buster Posey to take Tim Beckham. And if the Rays had taken Buster Posey, I have a feeling I might be wearing 2 rings right now. And I don't know if the Giants would have been.
Yeah, I think you might be. And I think we might not have this crazy catcher rule at the plate.
No question. Yeah. No question about it. Yeah. And I love that they've basically gone now full circle, where with what Scott Cousins did to Posey back in that year now is back to being legal again.
Right.
So when you figure that one out, you let us know.
Yeah, no, I have no idea what's going on there. I'm trying to think. I know that there are a bunch of Cal Ripken things, and you as a Baltimore kid, that tie in with the Blue Jays. I'm pretty sure his first ever game at shortstop was against the Blue Jays. I know the inning streak came to an end against the Blue Jays, and I want to say his first game at third on the other side was also against the Blue. His first big league game was against the Jays. I'm pretty
confident.
And
I believe the beginning of the streak – the streak started against the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah, it is amazing. And back then, it wasn't 19 times a year, right? You only
Correct.
Played in your division 13. So right. there was a lot of weird stuff that followed Cal Ripken Jr.'s career that had to do with these Toronto Blue Jays.
Absolutely.
And
89. Look, I'll get your fans back by bringing up 1989
yeah.
over and over again.
1989 was swell. I still remember, and I think it was... I can't remember if it was against the Orioles or not, but in 89, on the first week of September, when Glenn Allen Hill homered, and I'm trying to look it up right now in the minute we've got, Glenn Allen Hill hit a home run the first week of September, September 2nd, September 3rd, something that brought the Blue Jays back for a win. It was not against the Orioles, but I think that was the day that the Jays moved into first place for good, because this Baltimore team that was so terrible the year before and so surprising, and the Jays started 12-24 that year, and then that last series of the season or last week of the season, and And that was it. We finally shook you.
And last time we were here, I know you were running out of time, I met Cito Gaston. Never met him before, and I was all ready to not like him.
Right, because you're a Baltimore guy. Everybody
Baltimore
hates
guy,
him.
Everybody, no, I mean, you know, I meet him, and you can't not like him. He's a wonderful man, and he was incredibly nice to talk to. I told him he broke my heart in 89. He couldn't have been nicer, and had a nice conversation, so I'm a big fan of Cito.
Cito's a good guy, and he gets a bad, bad rap in Baltimore for
he does.
That All-Star game in 93.
93 when he didn't use Messina. Yeah. I don't know and why. Messina I didn't have the nerve to ask him.
Messina knew ahead of time. I mean, that was a bad decision anyway to tell him, look, it's your hometown. It's your first All-Star game. We're not going to use you.
Right.
But he knew, and he got up and he warmed up in the bullpen anyway.
That sounds like Messina.
I don't have a lot
me.
Of time for Mike Messina.
Neither do we in Baltimore anymore.
All right. Glad to hear it. Andy, thank you so much for this. Appreciate a half hour of your time catching up. And we'll see you down south. In the spring, you'll miss the playoffs for the first. That's not so terrible this year.
I hope you guys are in it. I mean, I DeMarlo Hale is one of my best friends. He was one of my minor league managers.
Cool.
And I love him, and I'm pulling for the Jays, and I hope you guys can make it, because there's nothing like the intensity of a pennant race.
These are the things we like to hear. Thank you so much, and have a great call tomorrow and Sunday. And if you need us over there, we're happy to come help.
Anytime. Thank you, Mike.
Andy Freed, WDAE, the sports animal. In Tampa, St. Pete. Thank you so much. We will take your calls on the other side as Blue Jays Talk to Midnight continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Not to be superstitious, but if the Blue Jays ever lose and you weren't listening to the game, it's entirely your fault. Stay tuned to Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Longoria goes 3-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Jay Happ just struck out the side.
That was in the first inning. Jay Happ strikes out the side around a walk to Evan Longoria. Jay Happ was terrific tonight. Seven innings of two-hitter. He allowed just one run. First pitch homer by Ryan Hannigan in the top of the third inning. That was it. But the Blue Jays didn't get anything. They lose 1-0. And that was just a spectacular half hour we did with Andy Freed. I thought we'd, 10 minutes and he'd be saying, it's time to go, got to go, day game tomorrow, all that stuff. He would have stayed here till midnight, I think. That was tremendous. And thanks so much to Rays broadcaster Andy Freed. Maybe we'll see if we can get his partner Dave Wills in tomorrow. 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. It is over in Kansas City. The Boston Red Sox beat the Royals 4-2, so that means Kansas City falls back into the second wild card in the American League, a half game ahead of the Seattle Mariners, and the Blue Jays are four games out. The Mariners are home to Oakland and leading the A's 2-1 in the bottom of the third. If we can, we will pop in for a live listen-in if something gets cooking in that Oakland-Seattle game. 416-870-0590, *590, and long distance 1-888-666-0590. Matthew is in Guelph. Matthew, welcome to Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Yeah, and he's been hanging on for close to 40 minutes. And
well, I appreciate your patience.
Hey, something? No, I'm not saying anything about that. It was great listening with the conversation with Andy Freed. Like, that was just bizarre and really neat. There was a lot of things that I'd love to talk with you.
What was bizarre?
I'm going to go back to the reason why I called.
Okay.
And that is that there is no reason, for one thing, there was no reason why the Jays should have lost 1-0 to Nathan Kearns. I think somebody fell asleep about what this guy was about. Triple-A pitcher and what he has, what he doesn't, because it seems like none of our batters had an idea. For one thing, for another, there was somebody that you were talking with just before you got on with Mr. Freed, and it was about somebody mentioned about Reyes and getting tapped.
Yeah, pretending to get hit by that pitch.
And he got away with it. If he can get on base, is what you said. If he can get on base, sure, go for it.
Yep.
How is that right by any means?
Because it's part of the game. If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. It's like people in other sports trying to draw penalties. It's all kinds of stuff.
No, okay. You know something? I kind of understand what you're saying, but on the other side of the coin, why bring those things up? If that's going to be the way it is, then we just teach our kids to cheat and get away with it whenever they can.
Well, it's different
it's
for
different
kids,
it's Major League.
Matthew.
I get it. It's Major League. But
yeah.
I'm going to hang up now and just listen to what you have to say. Thanks, Mike.
Okay. It's different for kids. There's no morality in professional sports. None whatsoever. And anyone who believes there is still hanging on to those, grand stories of yesteryear where athletes were heroes and all of that stuff and role models. They're not. They're just people, just like us. They just happen to be really good at sports, and they happen to have a lot of money. And you know, what's gone on in the NFL this last week should remind us again of that. All these people being held up as such wonderful human beings because they're so good at sports. It's just not always the case. I mean, they're great guys, sure, but they're terrible people too. It's just like any other walk of life. There's no morality. It's about putting food on the table. It's about the other guy trying to take money out of your children's mouth, to mix my metaphors. Derek Jeter does it, as I said earlier, and everyone thinks, oh, he's a real gamer. That's what you do. That's how you help your team at all costs, and that's what you do. If a pitcher throws a pitch that's not a strike, or pardon me, if a pitcher throws a pitch that's a strike and the umpire calls it a ball, is it incumbent on the hitter to say, no, you know what? That was a strike. No, it's not. If the umpire thinks you got hit by a pitch, then you got hit by a pitch. And you go down to first base unless they change their mind. I think when kids are playing sports, it should be all about sportsmanship and fair play and doing the right thing and teaching. You know, there are a lot of great lessons that sports can teach young people, but at this level there is zero morality in professional sports, nor should there be. It's about nothing but winning. Grant in Brampton, you're up next on Blue Jays Talk Till Midnight. Hey Grant.
Hey Mike. I was going to talk about something else, but I just need to respond to your comment there. You tried to distinguish between professional ball and amateur ball and kids playing. I think you're taking out something, the fact that kids are a great number of people who watch the adults play, and these are the people who are role models, and they'll watch the hockey players fight, they'll watch the soccer players dive, they'll watch players cheat or anything, and I think it yep. sends a bad message.
But I think it's up to us as parents to explain to our children that this is the difference between what they do and what you do.
I think it's easier said than done.
Maybe, but I mean, most of parenting isn't easy.
I agree, but it just to explain, well, this is, you know, the pros and they're doing it because they have to, but you know what, when you're playing, you got to just play fair. I think it's a hard line, but the main reason why I wanted to call is it seems that there's at least once or twice in every game where Jose Bautista seems to overreact, scream. In this particular game, I'm surprised he didn't get thrown out of the game, but there was a called strike. I think it was strike one.
Yeah, it was a 1-0 pitch in the eighth inning.
And pitch track, and I don't know what you think of pitch tracks and its accuracy, but it seems that 9 times out of 10, these are strikes. And I don't know if he's just making a fool of himself or where you think of his reaction.
I don't think that 9 times out of 10 they're strikes. I know exactly what you're talking about as far as Bautista. Tonight it was a strike on the pitch tracks box. What's interesting is there was a game, I think it was last week or maybe early. Yeah, it wasn't against the Cubs. I don't remember him doing that at all in the Cubs series. It might have been the last homestand where there were two pitches in a row. The game he got ejected. And the pitch tracks box said they were both strikes, but Brooks Baseball, Pitch FX said they were both balls. So they were obviously very, very, very touchy as to whether they were balls or strikes. And
right,
he did flip out.
Anyways, they were close enough.
Yeah, exactly. They were close enough.
Play baseball, you know, like there's these close calls and they could go either way and pitchers get upset when they don't get the call.
Yep. Yeah.
In these situations, you know, they could go either way.
It would be wonderful if Jose Bautista would not react that way. And it would be wonderful if he just maybe stepped out of the box, took a deep breath, stepped back in, and there you go. But this is who he is. And as long as he doesn't get himself thrown out of any more games, I don't really have that much of a problem with it.
He's lucky he didn't get thrown out of today's game because I was watching on TV and I heard him quite loudly say the F word. So,
But swearing doesn't get you thrown out of a professional sporting event.
I guess and on the topic, I know you. I don't know if you're making jokes or you're serious about robots or computers calling.
No, totally serious.
Are you totally serious?
Yeah, robot umpires definitely the way to go.
Okay. Anyway, thanks.
Well, wait. What do you think of that?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I just,
okay.
I'm not
fair.
Quite there yet. I think, there is a human element, and I'm all for instant replay. I think it's being, things need to work out, but I still think there's a role at this time for umpires calling strikes and balls.
I think that the only human element that should be at play in the game is by the people who are playing, as opposed to the people who are deciding. For me, that's the human element. But I appreciate the call.
Thanks.
Thank you, Grant, very much. And if anyone wants to get into a discussion about morality in professional sports, I'm totally open to that. It's Blue Jays Talk till midnight, so we do have the opportunity to delve farther into topics that we may not ordinarily, into which we may not ordinarily be able to delve. How about that? Yeah. That's what I'm thinking about. And honestly, I understand that kids are watching. But that's the role of we the parents. If we see things that we know, you know, this isn't how you behave in normal life, in normal society, in your games, then that we got to point that out. And we got to make sure that they understand it. Because your kids playing sports, me playing sports with my buddies that I've been playing with for 25 years, very, very different from the guys that we're talking about right now. Blue Jays, 1-0 losers to the Tampa Bay Rays. They are 4 games out of the wild card. They lose half a game in the standings to the Kansas City Royals, who now share the second wild card with the Seattle Mariners. The Mariners are leading the Oaklands by a score of 2-1. And if we can, we will take you there. The Blue Jays, pardon me, they're 4 games behind Kansas City. Seattle is still a half game behind Kansas City. And if Seattle wins, they will move into a tie with the Royals for that second wild card in the American League. And things are getting interesting in Seattle. So before we take our next call, how about this? It is a 2-1 Mariners lead over the Oakland A's, but the A's, for some reason, had the pitcher hitting. What is going on over there? They lost the DH already. Oh, wow. They lost the DH because Giovanni Soto had to come out of the game. So Derek Norris, who's DHing, is now catching. So Jason Hamill, after Nate Freeman singled, Jason Hamill dropped down a sacrifice bunt that was thrown away by Kyle Seager. So apparently Oakland showing that they can fight the Seager. And in the top of the 4th inning, Oakland is down a run with 2 on and nobody out. And Nick Punto at the plate against BC native James Paxton. Let's jump on right now and do a live listen-in to Oakland and Seattle.
Not as sharp as we've seen him, fellas.
No. Thinking of his starts this year, he's only had one other start where I can remember him struggling so much to throw his fastball for strikes.
Yeah.
I don't remember him. I think maybe was it when he was in St. Louis, maybe? Or, I mean, excuse me, in Philly?
Philly.
Yeah, Philly.
2-2. Smothered by Seager. Backhand. Does he get the out? He does. Brilliant play. And get the pitcher. That was a big advantage, too, to get Hamill.
Again, Kyle, aware of who's running the bases. I think most of the time you would not try this play right here as Punto gets jammed on this fastball. Good reaction for Kyle. Smothers it. Most of the time you wouldn't try that, I think, with a position player. But with the pitcher running, he's able to get the force out at second. He is having a great year defensively. The error, notwithstanding, he has been really good. That was an excellent play. And again, being aware of what's going on.
Now he's pesky Sam Fold. Walked, stole a base, and scored in the third inning. Earlier this season with Minnesota, played 53 games with them.
Middle infielders going to try to turn the double play, but you can see how much they have shortened it up, and it's because of the speed of Fold. He'll be difficult to double up.
Thanks to bunt. Cano scoop of the glove. And Fold with that bunt ties the score as Fryman comes home. So an RBI. Sam Fold.
Being live to the Mariners and the Oakland A's, and it's a 2-2 tie right now in the top of the fourth inning. Sam Fold just driving in a run with a bunt, so now two out and two on.
Punto to second.
Move the runner up into scoring position.
Well placed bunt, two blow.
Up towards second base.
Top of the order, Coco Crisp. Charging Seager. Throws him out. Tie ball game. As the A's get a run on one hit, an error, and leave a man aboard.
So there we go. Root Sports, our live listen-in. The Seattle Mariners and the Oakland A's, Dave Sims and Mike Blowers, and we got you a run. How about that? It's a 2-2 tie now, Oakland and Seattle, as they move to the bottom of the fourth. It's Blue Jays Talk till midnight. 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, and long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Let's go to Mark in Caledonia. Mark, welcome to Blue Jays Talk.
Hey, Mike, just wanted to make a comment. You said in your interview with, I forget, the Tampa Bay announcer.
Andy Freed.
Andy Freed, thank you. Okay, you had said that the Blue Jays are built to win now, and I agree with that comment. Now, having said that, if they're built to win now, why did this team not make any moves when moves were desperately needed when they had all the injuries?
How many times have you called to talk about this over the last 6 weeks?
Mike, I never really got an answer. I mean, you said not to trade the young players. Okay,
right.
So don't trade the young players. Well, then you're not playing to win now when you're not making deals to get yourself over the hump. It's a contradiction.
I really don't believe that to be true. I mean, if you... Maybe there's a difference between winning now and winning at any cost. And you can't be stupid to take one shot at a playoff and give up all your best meats and cheeses for a shot for a team that finished in last place last year.
But Mike, I don't think that's what ownership was thinking. I think they were thinking with their pocketbooks. Who says you have to give up this guy or that guy? I mean, trades are made all the time where you don't give up your best prospects, but you still add talent.
Right, ownership, so what talent are you looking at adding?
I'm sorry?
What talent were you looking at adding?
Let's say like a Chase Utley or someone to...
Chase Utley,
you know,
was not traded.
The hitting, I mean, which they sorely needed, we'll say,
okay,
tonight.
Okay, but
I mean,
let's, Mark, let's talk in real... honest-to-goodness terms, stuff that we can actually sink our teeth into. Chase Utley wasn't traded at the deadline.
I know he wasn't traded.
Chase Utley had a no-trade clause.
He
was obviously not available, because if he was available, he would have been traded. Or at least if he was available at a reasonable price to a team that he didn't have a no-trade clause to, then he would have been traded. He wasn't traded, which should indicate to you that no team in the major leagues was willing to pay what the Phillies were asking for him.
Mike, bottom line is this team didn't add talent where talent was sorely needed. They needed the bats. And you talk about you don't want to trade a Marcus Stroman or an Aaron Sanchez. Well, that's fine. Kids come and go all the time. When are you going to have another shot to win a possible World Series? This team hasn't contended since 93.
That's true. It's true, but it doesn't mean you throw away the next 5 years of it for your shot at sneaking into a wild card spot for a one-game coin flip to get to the playoffs.
But, Mike, they're built to win now. If that's the case, then if they're not built to win now or waiting 5 years, then they should trade the Jose Bautistas and the Edwin Encarnacions, because by the time they're willing to, or they're able to contend, those guys will be retiring.
Yeah, I don't get that leap of logic at all. I don't think there's anything that will...
How is that a leap of logic? They'll be too old to contend. Those
maybe,
guys will be
maybe
retiring.
Maybe if you let me finish the sentence, Mark, I could explain why.
Go ahead.
There's nothing to indicate that it's going to take 5 years and Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion's retirement for Marcus Stroman and Aaron Sanchez to be able to perform in the major leagues, seeing how they're, you know, doing it really, really well right now.
Mike, the fans have shown, even tonight and the past few nights, they're not coming out to the ballpark because they realize ownership's not invested in this. They're not invested.
They have the ninth highest payroll in Major League Baseball. Whether you think that's enough or not, and I agree it should be higher, there's no reason that the Blue Jays can't be a top five payroll team in the major leagues. But to say that they're not invested when the payroll has nearly doubled over the last 18 months is just silly.
Mike, when they add Danny Valencia, and that's their only add at the deadline, that tells me they're not invested. Bob Elliott wrote that they didn't want to add salary. And he's very formidable when it comes to knowledge about, you know, baseball and whatnot.
Bob Elliott is, in fact, very formidable.
Add, then what are the fan base supposed to think?
The fan base is supposed to think that the Blue Jays didn't think that Chase Headley or Martin Prado, or Brandon McCarthy, or Astrubal Cabrera was a good fit, and they were probably right.
But they think that Ryan Goins, who hits 195, is a good fit?
They're not paying Ryan Goins $25 million for the next 2.5 years.
Mike, you would pay the rest of the... Again, if they think that Ryan Goins and Danny Valencia are the keys to pushing themselves into the playoffs, so be it. But as a fan... I mean, they're treating us like idiots.
No, I don't think that's true. I think that if you actually could see through your rage and actually look at who got moved, at what they got moved for, at what they've done since they got moved, and what they did before they got moved, you would come to the rational conclusion that with Brett Laurie apparently on his way back, and remember, at the time, that's what we thought was going to happen. You're not going to trade a major asset to have 1 week of Chase Headley playing third base with Brett Laurie coming right back.
Mike, if it gets me three or four more wins, I'm in a tie right now, possibly.
Yeah, it's not going to get you three or four. That's just silly.
Ownership wants us to believe that they're invested in it. The proof on the field shows that they are not.
That's only true, Mark, through the lens that you're looking, and that obviously is a lens that isn't interested in hearing any rational argument, because...
Mike, I'm not the only lens. The ballpark is half or three-quarters empty, so obviously I'm not the only one out there who believes that.
I will tell you this, and I will quote the great John Lennon, Mark in Caledonia, as we say goodbye to you to make room for another caller. John Lennon said once, "You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one." And he was absolutely correct. He was not the only one. But it didn't make him right. And just because a lot of people agree with you doesn't make you right. And if you actually look, again, you look, where these guys fits for the Blue Jays, at what they're making and what they're doing, I mean, the very idea that Chase Headley is going to get you three or four more wins in the 6 days he plays before Brett Laurie comes back from the disabled list is ridiculous. And it's just really not even worth addressing. We continue with your calls. It's Blue Jays Talk to Midnight. Let's go up to Aurelia. And wow, very creative spelling from our producer, J.D. Bunkus, on Aurelia. Mark, go ahead, please.
Spell it any way you want. It's still the home of Gordon Lightfoot. And I'm not the only one. Is it me? Adderall is prescribed as ADHD drug, and
for ADD and ADHD.
As Jeff Blair reported this morning on BC, if 119 MLB players have exemptions to use this drug, does that mean there are approximately one-seventh of MLB players are ADHD, or is it a broader statement on our prescription pharmaceuticals, or as it pertains to MLB? Do we need to go further for the drug policies for Major League Baseball?
It is a shocking thing to me that so many, that the difference between the general population and the population of players in Major League Baseball who apparently require Adderall. And they're all getting doctor's notes. Somehow they're all getting doctor's notes, just like, I don't want to cast aspersions on the process.
In society, but in MLB, if they can't readdress their policies, if this isn't a wake-up call, I don't know what is. It's like a fundamental player, as a player who's key to a team that's in a pennant race and a possible World Series appearance, and now this happens 2 weeks before the end of the season. This is atrocious.
Atrocious that he got caught, or that he used to have the exemption, or that so many people have it, or what?
120 or 7%, or sorry, 1 in 7.
Okay, don't repeat yourself. Tell me what's atrocious.
Major League Baseball have exemptions for this drug, an illegal substance.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. I don't know if Chris Davis getting caught is the wake-up call, because it doesn't change the fact that all those guys have the exemptions.
Two weeks before the end of the season.
Well, that doesn't matter. I mean, again, Chris Davis isn't one of those guys who has the exemption. So
no,
he got caught.
He got caught he's in the spotlight in the middle of September.
Yeah, and you know what? It would be great if this draws attention to it, because it does seem very odd. And I think that there are a couple of Blue Jays who are on that list, or at least there have been in the past, and I don't get it. Is there something about being a major league, an elite level athlete, that more people who have attention deficit disorder or attention hyperactivity deficit disorder are prone? Is that something that helps you along the way, or is it that they've just found this drug that helps you focus? And
when it comes to forgiveness, one word, Melky. But I would be willing to forgive Chris Davis. But I think it's because it's in the midst of a pennant race, and it's not a off-season thing or something. It's not Ryan Braun should have been the biggest wake-up call. But I think this is. I've been thinking about it all day long.
Okay.
Odd.
All right.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you. I don't know that this is a huge wake-up call, but it will be very interesting, again, to see if the amount of attention paid to this is the amount of attention that is warranted. Because like the caller says, it's about 15 to 20% of the players in Major League Baseball have therapeutic use exemptions for Adderall. And it's very difficult to believe. You know, as I said before, I don't want to cast aspersions on the medical community or anything like that. But is it as easy as getting a prescription for medicinal marijuana in California, where you go in and you say, I got trouble sleeping, or you have to go into a doctor and say, I have trouble concentrating sometimes. Sure, no problem. You get yourself on Adderall. It is without question, from those who have used it, who don't have ADD or ADHD, a huge enhancer of your focus. And no question, very, very helpful. And I wonder,
I really do. Hopefully, Major League Baseball clamps down on it. But then again, as long as legitimate doctors are prescribing it, what are they going to do? We will take more of your phone calls. We will step away for a second. But before we do that, Joe Maddon talked to our very own Travis McKenzie, our intrepid reporter, in the race scrum before the game, and talked about the Chris Davis suspension. Here it is.
It's tough on Baltimore. I mean, he's really starting to come on again. He's got that prodigious power. He's a very good fielder. Again, when it comes down to breaking that particular rule, that's what it's there for. I mean, that's part of the level playing field in our game. Although that is a legal, basically, drug within our game. It happened. His own personal logic regarding how it came across, I have no opinion on that because I'm not aware of any of that. The rule's there for a reason. Obviously, the rule worked. But again, I'm saying it's going to really, I think that having it out on both Machado and him out at the same time can be very difficult.
And Wieters.
Well, Wieters, they've done a great job this year. I mean, you talk about Joseph. I really thought when Machado goes down that team suffers, but they've held serve. They did it again today already. They've been very resilient. They got that thing going on. So this is when Willie Ibar steps up and becomes a star.
There's some Tampa Bay Rays memories. Willie Ibar stepping up and becoming a star. It's true. He could have said Dan Johnson. That would have been nice. But instead he goes with Willie Ibar. And today, despite losing Chris Davis for 25 games, the Orioles won the first two without him. They swept a doubleheader from the New York Yankees. And thus and therefore, their magic number to clinch the American League East is 5 right now. The Blue Jays are in second, so any combination of Orioles wins and Blue Jays losses totaling 5 clinches the AL East for the Orioles, which means that it's not unlikely that Baltimore will clinch when the Blue Jays are there Monday through Wednesday. Although the Blue Jays will have a very, very major say in that. Right now, the Jays, with the loss today, are 11.5 games out of first place in the AL East, and they're second. The Yankees are a full game behind them. 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-666-0590. Blue Jays Talk Till Midnight continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Join Blue Jays Talk with Mike Wilner after the game and together discover there is such a thing as a stupid question. Many, many of them. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Swing and a miss, strike 3. The game is over. The Rays shut out the Blue Jays 1-0. They allowed the Blue Jays only 2 base hits, their 20th shutout of the season, as the Blue Jays lose game 1 of this weekend series to Tampa Bay.
Final call from Jerry Howarth. Deonna Navarro struck out by Grant Balfour, who amazingly managed to pitch a 1-2-3 bottom of the ninth in under 45 minutes. And the Blue Jays lose 1-0 to the Tampa Bay Rays. 20 shutouts for the Rays, who have been shut out 17 times this year. So it's been a rough year for the Rays. They are 71-77 on the season. Blue Jays 76-70, 4 games behind the Kansas City Royals, who hold the second wild card in the American League. And the Royals may be caught by the Seattle Mariners. Tonight, as you just heard from Kayla Harris, the Mariners lead the A's 3-2, now going to the sixth. If Seattle holds on to win that game, they would move into a tie with Kansas City. And the three teams, Oakland, Seattle, and Kansas City, would all be separated by just half a game in the standings. The Blue Jays are tied with the Cleveland Indians 4 games out of that second wild card. I'm Mike Wilner. This is Blue Jays Talk to Midnight. Taking your calls at 416-870. You know the numbers. Owen in Toronto, you're up next on Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hey, Mike. A little bit of a disappointing night. I went to the ball game today, and first thing I realized right when I got there was a terrible crowd. I hadn't been for quite a bit, but I mean, it was just a really, really awful crowd, and I just wanted to know what you think about that, especially during a race like this. I mean, sure, we might be far out because we'd have to win, 12 out of our next 16 games if we want to have a chance of making the playoffs, but what do you think about the horrible crowd tonight?
You just mean the size or the atmosphere or what?
Like, everything, just like, I don't know how many people there were exactly, but just the whole thing. It wasn't very, loud, and especially since there weren't a lot of people. I mean, just the overall like atmosphere. Like, what do you think of it?
I was very surprised, and I took a lot of heat for some reason on Twitter for saying that I was very surprised that it was such a small crowd. It was 19,909, and I said that, you know, it seems like all the idiots who were in such a rush to say that the season is over have won, that they've convinced the right-thinking people of this fine city that the season is over when it by no means is. And I'm stunned that the crowd was this small today with, you know, the real first taste of a pennant race in years. And this is the closest the Blue Jays have been to a playoff spot this late in the season in this century. And the fact that it was quiet and that there wasn't a lot of atmosphere, that happens in a 1-0 game you're losing, especially when they only had one runner in scoring position after the first inning. There wasn't a lot to cheer about. And, you know, it's not like Tampa had any rallies that that the Blue Jays pitchers had to snuff out or anything like that. So that I don't really have an issue with. I just figured that we'd be closer to 30,000 tonight than to 20.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's why I was asking. I was very surprised. I thought there'd be more people. Now, two more things. First of all, the whole thing with the Reyes thing, I actually love that. You know, him pretending like he got hit by the pitch. I really don't think he got hit. I mean, it's hard to tell, but I like that. I mean, like,
he didn't.
Know, right, exactly. But you got to, like, you know, at least he's trying. You could see when he got on first base, he's kind of chuckling because I think he knew. And then he got sent back to home plate, which wasn't very surprising, but I have no problem with that. I actually think that if he's doing that, he's playing the right way, because if you're in like this close to a pennant race, like you said, you got to do everything you can, and whether it's fair or not, and people agree or disagree, I mean, you're playing professional baseball. It's not like, I don't know, amateur baseball. It's professional, so like, doesn't matter. There's much worse things that happen. So I totally agree with you on that. And next, also, this is a question that I really on a regular night wouldn't ask you, but I just, since you were talking and you were saying how you'll get into other topics, I just wanted to know, I know this was a long time ago, but what did you ever think of Michael Jordan playing baseball?
I thought it was awesome that he wanted to try it, and whether it was, you know, the urban myth of the gambling suspension or whatever, I had a chance to broadcast in Double A the year that Michael Jordan was playing professional baseball, but I was in the Eastern League, he was in the Southern League, and never the twain shall meet, so I didn't get to see it. But I thought it was fantastic, and it illustrated just how hard hitting a baseball is. You know, it looks so easy from up here, and it looks so easy watching it on TV and all of that, and Michael Jordan, who at the time might have been the greatest athlete in the world, hit like 212 in Double A.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't believe that. It's just crazy. Anyways, thanks, Mike. Hopefully the Jays will win some more games and maybe give us a chance. But, you know.
We'll not going to be easy. Exactly. Not going to be easy, but it's not at all. It's certainly not outside the realm of possibility. Thank you for the call.
Yeah.
Appreciate it a lot.
Good. I was there on Tuesday night, and actually Tuesday night was a smaller crowd, but was one of the better crowds I've seen at the Sky Dome in a long time.
That was the crowd Tuesday night. We're in the bottom of the seventh, and Jerry mentioned it, and I mentioned it after. Everybody was up and cheering in the seventh inning when Jose Bautista had that three-run double. They were cheering on that 3-2 pitch, and it's something that I haven't felt around here in a long time. And you're right, a smaller crowd, but, man, was that something.
It seemed to me like a smart baseball crowd, and like I was very proud of Toronto that was possible. I didn't think it was possible.
It's sure it's possible. Of course it's possible.
I guess so. Not since I've been around. But anyway, I've got a couple things to say. One of the things about Bob Elliott's report around the trade deadline was that the Jays were telling other teams that they're unwilling to take on payroll.
Right. The report from Bob Elliott, which Alex Anthopoulos has basically denied but never strayed out, said that it had to be dollar in, dollar out on any trades that the Blue Jays made.
For me, at the trade deadline, I would hope that the Jays were telling other teams that, whether or not that was true.
I don't know if that's if that gives you any sort of advantage.
Well, just saying that, like, well, you know, we can't take on Vernon Wells' $23 million contract to give you Mike Napoli, for instance, unless
you know, unless you give us something else, oh, maybe, yes, we are able to take on $10 million after the fact.
Yeah, again, I don't know if that gives you any competitive advantage, but yeah, look, Asdrubal Cabrera got moved and the Indians paid his whole ticket. Chase Headley's ticket was paid by of a large margin by the San Diego Padres. So guys were being moved with their money. And so, if the Blue Jays had wanted one of those guys, I would think they could have gotten him.
True, but I feel that maybe Alex was using that as a trading tactic, and it was blown out of proportion.
Maybe, and maybe it didn't exist, and maybe if the right deal had come along, then they would have had the money, but I don't know.
Yep. The other thing I'd like to talk about is
you got
is
20
that,
seconds.
Jose Reyes not admitting when he was not hit by a pitch and holding children to a different standard to professional baseball players.
You got 10 seconds.
Okay. I think everyone should be held to the same standard, whether or not they get paid or not.
Okay. I disagree. This isn't about sportsmanship. It really isn't. It's about winning. And when you're a kid, it is about sportsmanship and building character and all of that stuff. This is just about money and about winning, as sad as that is to say. Back at 12:30 tomorrow. See you then.